everybody. Welcome back to the show. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I'm here, as I always am, with Dom. Dom, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. And before we get into today's episode, we're going to be talking about the new penultimate episode of the season for Survivor Blood versus Water. Want to let you guys know about a couple of things before we get into all of that. First of all, yesterday afternoon, we just had a great discussion, our first ever live Google Hangout podcast. And joining us for that was the legendary Dan Giesling. We talked about his new book and his tactics for influencing people. It was a great time. And if you missed that, we're going to put a post up on the blog sometime soon. Once we figure out how to actually embed a YouTube clip, because this is something we are terrible at. But for now, you can go and search on YouTube. Just search for the Dom and Colin podcast there and you'll be able to find it. That was a great time. Dan was awesome. And one other thing that we definitely want to let you guys know about is Dom actually recently joined these two guys, Ari and Akiva, for some Survivor discussion about last week's episode. And I'm going to be joining them sometime after the end of the season. And they're great, two really sharp guys. We just became aware of them. But Dom, I think your discussion there was great. And what they do is called the Survivor Blogcast. And I don't know the direct link, but if you Google in Survivor Blogcast onto, you know, just Google, it's the top link. So definitely check that out. Those guys are doing some really cool stuff.
Again, I can just put the link for that in the show notes. That was a lot of fun to do, and it was all written, so you can just read it at your own leisure. If you're sick of hearing our voices by now, then you can still hopefully get something useful out of that.
Yeah, definitely check that out. And of course, everyone knows, we have our retrospective coming up very soon with Richard Hatch. And as a bit of a tease, we have for the off-season a couple of other old-school guests looking promising. Nothing set in stone yet, but certainly some good leads for some other old-school retrospectives. So subscribe on iTunes to make sure you don't miss any of that. And while you're there, whether the hell you think we deserve it or not, leave us a 5-star rating. I don't care if you believe it. All right, so Dom, I know today is going to be a quick episode because the season finale is in just about 24 hours from now. I think we're going to mostly be taking this basically like topic by topic, some quick hits. We'll see how it goes.
I think we're going to leave most of the general stuff for when we do the post-finale recap after the season's ended. So this is just going to be basically the greatest hits of this episode. So hopefully we can get you out of here in about 30, 45 minutes.
Yeah, something like that. And before we actually get into the new episode, I want to definitely bring up a good friend of the podcast, Gordon Holmes, in the Survivor Hall of Fame. Of course, he's the founder. We just found out the new the 2013 class of inductees. It's and coincidentally, people that we've all three of them are people who have been on this very podcast. It's Kim Spradlin, Johnny Fairplay, and John Cochran. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so obviously, I think recency bias is coming into play a bit here, and we'll get into that in a bit more detail when we talk about Cochran. But I think for Kim, she's someone who, if we were having this discussion in 5 years instead, she would still stand out as some kind of, you know, timeless example of what it means to be a truly great Survivor player. And so I have no problem with her getting in at this time. And I think she's perfectly deserves to be in that class. And I think Fairplay is someone who, whatever you think about him as a person or as a reality TV character, he's someone who has indisputably, I think, shaped but not just Survivor, but reality TV as a whole. And I think the fact that he hasn't been indicted already is kind of a mark against the Hall in general. So I'm glad that he finally made it in, and it didn't look like he was going to be in for a while, but I think he maybe got a late surge in votes or something and managed to power through there. Cochran's one that I know has received a lot of backlash from a lot of old school fans in particular, and I think that's perfectly understandable. I mean, as I think we both made clear when we were talking about Calamone, and since then, we're both fans of Cochran. We appreciated him back in South Pacific, and we're very glad that he was able to kind of undergo the transformation and go on to win his own season. I'm not sure he's someone who, once that kind of recency bias has faded, is going to stand out really at all.
I think he'll be memorable as the story of Survivor comes to a close. I think people will remember Cochran because he's so different from most of the other people and certainly most of the other winners. But you're absolutely right in my mind, which is it's definitely, if at the very least, far too soon for Cochran to be getting in. Totally agree about Kim and Fairplay. Kim is the greatest player who has ever stepped foot on the island. Johnny Fairplay, perhaps the greatest villain and certainly shaped the course of not only Survivor but reality TV. No problem with either of those. In my opinion, it definitely should have been Coach in over Cochran.
Well, I think a lot of people would have said the same thing about Coach, and it's kind of an extension of what people have been saying in general about Cochran and his edit over his two seasons, which is it feels very kind of forced and constructed, where it's almost like we're being led by the hand to think certain things about Cochran and appreciate his storyline without just being given a chance to do that by ourselves. and this kind of over-the-top treatment of him where we're supposed to marvel at his transformation is, it just kind of takes away any kind of goodwill people have towards him, it seems. And I think, if you ask him, he would say that this kind of thing where in his first season he gets his edit, which paints him as completely incompetent, like almost an invalid, and then in his second season it's whitewashed to the point where none of his possible personality quirks or flaws are even showcased at all. It's almost as if they want you to think that he's two completely different people, which kind of undermines this whole transformation storyline that they've been pushing.
Yeah, and the other thing that I was thinking about earlier is, I am sure that if anyone is aware that it's too soon for Cochran, it is Cochran himself. I'm sure I don't think terrified is the right word, but I am positive he is well aware that he probably hasn't necessarily done what a lot of other people have done that would merit a spot in the Hall of Fame, at least at this point. I could definitely, I'm not like you, I don't think, where I would say he should never get in, but this is just once again certainly far too soon. At least for me. And again, I think he's well aware of that. But good for him. You know, it's nice. Like, I'm happy for him to get not only to play Survivor, to then go on to be a returnee, to win Survivor, and now be in the Survivor Hall of Fame. It's got to be incredible for him. And to get, you know, he's literally just been given a job, a great job, like his dream job, because of his Survivor time, bypassing however many steps on the ladder or however many rungs on the ladder the typical sitcom writer needs to go through before they land that position. And I think it's all kind of, I would imagine, at least in his mind, all very surreal. And this is just another thing where it's like, how is this even happening to me?
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. But I don't want to feel like I have to qualify in that way, if that makes sense. Where it's like, as someone who is a fan of Cochran, I don't want to have to feel like I'm making excuses for the fact that he's being given this accolade that maybe he doesn't deserve.
Let's talk about this new episode of Blood vs. Water. And last time we lost Caleb on Redemption Island, and Katie, when she drew the bad rock, she was bounced from the actual game. We're now down to five people. And sidebar, we say this all the time, yet again, this episode is a great demonstration of why the Final Two format is so much better than the Final Three format, because when we're down to five people, if only two of them are going to get to face the jury, this is the most important round in the game, I would say. Whereas when they know that three of them are going to get to face the jury, the game is going to be over after the vote at Final Six.
And that's especially acute when you have Redemption Island in play, where, you know, if you're bringing someone back when there are four people left to make it Final Five Part Two, if you like, then the Final Three, or at least some kind of Final Three deal, should already be in place long before then. You know, that should be locked up. And so it should basically never affect the outcome. Whereas if you have a Final Two in place, maybe having a different person there in that fifth spot actually could change a lot, where, you know, maybe a different group of three comes together and tries to knock out an obvious Final Two pair or something like that. It could add a new dimension to the game, whereas at the moment it's just, you know, it's basically there for show.
Right, yeah, it's there for someone, hey, maybe this person's going to win out and then face the jury and rob the rightful winner of the title.
Right, and you're going to know pretty much as soon as the outcome of the first immunity is determined whether that's going to happen or not, so it doesn't even keep the suspense there for that long.
Right, yeah, I mean, it's just, once again, it's such a disaster that Final Three has become the standard as far as, and no, nothing short of that. I think Final Two is just such a much more compelling game and makes for, like, I feel like there's no arguing that if this were a Final Two season, this round would have made a much more exciting episode of TV. Like, when it's Final Two versus Final Three, the end game is really intense with the Final Two, and it's totally, it's already in the books after the Final Six vote when it's a Final Three facing the jury.
Right, especially since the most common rationale for wanting to go to the Final Three with a certain pair obviously can't exist when there's a Final Two where that pair's just going to take each other. Right, like here, if there's a Final Two, Tyson and Jervis are going to go to the end if they can make that happen, and so Monica does actually have an incentive to try to break them up here. With a Final Three, though, she knows that any heat that's directed at one of them is also going to be directed at the other, to some extent at least. And so she can afford or even be eager to go to the Final Two with them because she knows she can be that alternative option.
Well, right, yeah, exactly. It's like when there are five people left in a game with a Final Two and there's a very solid pair, it's like, well, one of them's got to go this round. Whereas when it's Final Three, it's like, who can jump on board with them? So Tyson tells people about his new hidden immunity idol as they're fearing that Hayden or Sierra may find it. And actually, I want to say, I don't hate this here. I know I'm normally an advocate for don't ever tell anyone about your hidden immunity idol unless you're using it to, like, really strengthen your alliance and rather than just for, like, if your plans are only to use it for personal safety, keep that shit to yourself. But the reason I'll get into why I don't hate it here is it's not like it really changes anything, and it totally reassures his allies that there's nothing that can go wrong this round. And not only that, it also removes the idea from their mind, if the idea was even in place, that, oh, even if we thought about taking a shot at Tyson, he's got this idol. I just don't see – I feel like the upside is so great here, and the downside is virtually nothing.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that people were saying it was a bad idea. It seemed like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, I haven't heard anyone say that it was a bad idea. I just wanted to contrast why I normally advocate for not telling people and why it's totally fine, and not only fine but great in this instance to be telling people. Yeah, so Redemption Island now. Katie loses after Laura once again comes in first place in the duel, and it comes down to Tina and Katie, and people were speculating, oh, if this does in fact become the case where Laura's already finished and it comes down to Tina and Katie, will Tina lay down for Katie? And I honestly think we might have seen the opposite here, where Katie really didn't even seem to be trying.
Yeah, although I thought when Tina asked her if it was okay, she obviously said, oh yeah, it's fine, but she seemed kind of reluctant about it, as if, you know, she didn't feel like she could say no, but she really wanted to.
I think, right, exactly. I don't think Katie was super stoked. Like, obviously she was happy to be out there and wanted to go play Survivor, but I think that Tina is much more into it than Katie ever would be. And I don't think I think she was happy for her mom to get to stay in the game. And I think she had no issues with her mom being the one who eliminated her. Like, and certainly to speak to your point, I think Katie also recognized whether I say do or don't beat me. Like, if Katie could say, no, 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 stop immediately, I want to stay in this game, I don't think Tina's going to do it. I think Katie understood one way or the other, Tina's about to beat her in this duel, and she wanted to go down with some kind of, like, dignity, maybe the wrong word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, that would have been really interesting to see, though. Like,
wish she had done it.
Yeah, if Katie wanted to say anything, you're just like, nope, just shut it down right there. But yeah, that heartfelt speech that Tina gave when Katie was due to leave, that, given what we know now about what happened recently, that just seemed so gut-wrenching at the time.
And I remember seeing someone like, oh, if Tina felt so bad, she should have thought of this about 5 minutes ago when she was just about to beat Katie in the challenge. But yeah, it was very interesting. I guess parting thoughts on Katie now that she's officially out of the game?
Yeah, I made fun of you, as I always do at the beginning of the season, for just, like, selecting someone random and putting them on a pedestal, but over the course of the season, I actually came to really like Katie, and I'm not quite sure why. Like, it's not like she actively did any particular thing. It's just, I don't know, I found her endearing for some reason.
I mean, backgammon player, atheist, super hot juror, what's not to love? I feel like maybe for the first time ever, I got one of these preseason girls I'm randomly going to fall in love with actually right, and they turned out exactly, if not better. Like, Katie exceeded my expectations, and I'm thrilled with that call. I totally think Katie came through it exactly as I was expecting. Obviously, I don't think she's someone who's going to be winning the game too often, especially when her mom's out there, and certainly not within this cast too often. I think her best results, at least this season, probably would have been like a losing finalist. But very much enjoyed Katie. Granted, we didn't see too much of her, but I was very happy and very much still am a big fan of Katie, to put it mildly.
Yeah, I think you got it right, although I'm very hesitant to say that, given it's just going to encourage you going into next season.
It's not like either whether I got it right or wrong, I was going to stop.
Yeah, you're not going to be dissuaded. yeah, those glasses, dude, those are becoming a fashion icon.
Yeah, and the glasses with the thigh highs, yeah, it's the thigh high socks, yeah, it's a lot of good stuff happening there.
Very impressive. But yeah, while this was going on, you could tell that Jeff was rising to the occasion in every sense of the word, because he knew that this was the last chance he could go into this whole diatribe about how it's blood versus water, and, you know, parents stabbing their children in the back, and he really wanted to milk this for all it's worth, and you could tell, like, the tremor in his voice as it reached, like, its highest register.
Yeah, like, as we've said a couple of weeks ago, I think, on the podcast, Jeff is totally the guy who just tries to, like, squeeze every ounce of significance out of every single moment, especially one that speaks for itself so clearly, I would say. You could tell, definitely, that Jeff was loving every minute. Like, mother and daughter, Redemption Island, who will stay? Who will go? Like, so this is exactly why Jeff wanted to do Blood versus Water in the first place, I would say.
It's kind of weird, though, because you think, if he feels the need to hype it up that much, like, isn't this something which should speak for itself, right? Like, you have parents competing against their children. Even the most brain-dead of viewers is going to realize the significance of that. You don't need to, well, apparently he does need to beat it into their heads over and over again, but you would think that would just go without saying.
Right, yeah, that's exactly. So, I mean, honestly, Dom, because it's a final three, and this is why we keep harping on it, there's very little for us to be talking about here as far as, like, strategy, because it's so clear that, especially when Tyson has the idol that Monica knows about, and he and Jervis and Monica have been together for so long, and it seems like, obviously, Jervis is not flipping on him, and Monica is not, and probably a lot of people are talking about maybe, oh, Monica should have flipped, or Jervis should have flipped. I don't think so. I have no problem with either of them doing that. It seems so clear that it's always going to be Hayden or Sierra going here, and it all just comes down to immunity. And obviously, when Sierra wins immunity, it's going to be Hayden every time.
Yeah, I think one reason there was such a lack of suspense here was because this was so obviously the right play for everyone involved. I don't think anyone... Maybe you could quibble with their execution, maybe. I think, obviously, going to talk about Hayden later. But, yeah, like, I don't think Monica should have switched. I don't think Sierra should have, like, tried to sell out Hayden or anything like that. I think this was clearly what they all had to do, and so that kind of, you know, you couldn't sit there hoping for someone to make some egregious mistake that just obviously wasn't coming.
Oh, there's no mistake, I would say, that anyone even could have made to change the outcome here.
Right, and if you look at the secret scenes this week, it seems pretty clear that Monica, okay, maybe she was giving lip service to the idea of flipping, but she was never actually going to go through with it. Like, she rationally understood, I need to sit with Tyson and Jervis. They need to sit with me. It's a wrap. We just need to get to the final three and battle it out from there.
I remember hearing Steven talk about, I don't know if it was on our podcast or on Know It Alls, where when you're out there and it is kind of the obvious episode, the questions that you get are pretty leading, where you know what they're looking for you to do, which is, yeah, this is going to be probably what I do. But there's also considering this, where you just kind of, like you said, pay lip service to the camera and give them something to work with to make an episode out of. But I don't feel like anything that anyone says in Monica's position or Jervis's position or Tyson's position, other than I'm going to stick with Monica, Jervis, and Tyson, whichever one is talking, is going to be the outcome ever. And there's, I feel like it's useless even trying to read into that, because I think far more often than not, they know that they're never actually going to deviate from the plan. Let's talk about this immunity challenge. Because, you know, as mentioned, Sierra ends up coming from behind to win this immunity. The thing that I want to talk about is the answer to this puzzle. You are going to have to dig deep. Now, as he was saying, oh, we got this secret phrase, and the challenge lasted for about 5 minutes of people going out and getting their pieces. And Twitter, of course, we're always live tweeting the episodes where people can follow us at Colin Stone and at @MC_Usher. I was joke tweeting a series of hashtags of like hashtag the secret phrase is, and the first one I did is you have to dig. And it was completely a joke. And speaking of jokes, that is exactly what the answer was.
Yeah. Like, what? I wonder how many favors Jeff had to pull in CBS to get this installed as like the classic CBS phrase. Like, I think even the producers who, like, he's their boss and he officially controls what they do. I don't think they bought any of this shit at all. Like, they knew this wasn't a classic Survivor phrase, but, I mean, like, they were concerned with their jobs, I guess? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was Probst insisting on it or someone insisting on, to Probst that, hey, this has become a staple such, like, to the point that people should be aware of it. But I feel like this is definitely thin at best as far as like a classic Survivor phrase.
I don't think anyone would sabotage their own dignity enough to suggest to Probst without his prompting that this was any kind of like classic phrase. Like, you're just playing into his hands at that point.
Actually, I think you're absolutely right. I feel like if I were any staffer on Survivor with, unless I was like John Kierhofer, where I've been there since the beginning and I feel like I'm on roughly equal footing with Probst, or at least I know I'm not going to lose my job, I would be fucking terrified to suggest this as the phrase, like, to suggest to Probst that I don't take his attempts at motivation and so forth as seriously as he would probably like me to. Because I feel like when he's saying, you have to dig, he's doing it in an active, like, in a very legitimate effort to get people to actually dig. And I don't think he understands necessarily the context of why it's caught on the way that it has.
Jeff was really, I wouldn't say enjoying himself with this challenge, but he was like, he was just taking an act of Sierra. Like, he was not impressed that she was coming through to win a challenge. It was like, Sierra failing in this challenge like the pathetic piece of filth that she is. Like, Jeff was like, back off, okay? She's not doing that badly, all things considered. But he just was laying into her over and over again.
He seems to like to do that to the Katies and Sherrys and now apparently Sierra. Not entirely sure whether there are any dudes that he's ever done that to, but who knows? Maybe make your own theories at home for that. I'm sure that's not a topic anyone's ever going to talk about for Survivor, right? Is sexism? No one's aware of that.
Certainly not.
Yeah. So let's talk about, I know something actually that you wanted to bring up that I'm not entirely clear on, are some continuity errors in this episode.
Yeah, Jeff Pittman was the one who really brought everyone's attention to this. You could tell when the camera was cutting to Jervis's station, and it did it a few times, his buff was like flitting back and forth between his wrist and his head, where I think at the beginning of the challenge and then the shot they showed at the end where he was almost finishing at the moment Sierra was, his buff was on his wrist. But at various points in the challenge, you could tell that his buff was on his head instead. So, and obviously there would be no reason for him to change it during the challenge. So something must have been edited in some weird way there to make it all piece together.
Yeah, first of all, Jeff Pittman is always the guy who figures this kind of stuff out. And second of all, I was thinking the other day, if I were actually out there on the island, I would change my buff around, like to a different part of my body every hour and a half or so, just to completely screw with the editors who could not then have any kind of semblance of continuity if they wanted to take me out of context. Yeah, so one other thing before we get into the vote and those considerations, which is going to be about a 30-second segment. Sierra, as part of her winning immunity, also gets a reward, and she chooses to pick Hayden here. Thoughts on this?
Okay, now, Sierra got a lot of heat for this. I don't think it was that bad, because, firstly, from what it seemed, they knew at that point that it wasn't like they were going on some separate location, like on a boat or something, where they would have time to themselves. It was going to be at camp in view of everybody, where they couldn't really kind of scheme in any obvious way. And I could see why maybe Sierra would want some time with Hayden to just talk things over and work out a plan for when the reward was over. I think the real priority here, though, has to be not letting Tyson, Monica, and Jervis stay together, rather than like any downside of keeping Hayden there. So like, if Sierra had taken Tyson, for instance, and just let Hayden have an opportunity to work on Monica, that would have been perfectly fine as well. The issue is, they made it look like it was us versus them, and so they kind of just gave more fuel for Tyson and Jervis to cement Monica's loyalty to them.
Yeah, I think the only wrong play here is taking Hayden, but at the end of the day, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't fucking matter. Nothing was ever going to change this round. Might as well give Hayden some food so he can keep being a stud. All right. Sierra's immune. It's obviously going to be Hayden who gets voted out here literally 100% of the time, despite the fact that he's Hayden Moss and he's one of the best players ever to play on either reality TV show, let alone
both. Hold up. Okay. You can have a chance to gush all you want later. Let's just get...
All right.
Okay. So a lot of people have... I wouldn't say a lot of people. I think most people realize the facts of the matter here, but some people have wondered maybe why Monica didn't switch, and I think it's pretty obvious here. Firstly, that if she does that, it's not even clear that she actually gets to the final three, because we have someone coming back from Redemption Island. From the way things have been going so far, it looks like it's going to be Laura again, and when that happens, Sierra, Laura, and Hayden should in theory be a fairly tight threesome, so unless they think that they're going to be willing to cut Hayden out final four, then Monica's slated for fourth place there, which really should never happen, considering she's probably going to be a goat in either scenario. Secondly, if she goes with Tyson and Jervis, she at least has the core of her argument to make for herself, right? She can say, Tyson and Jervis have been acting disrespectfully to people throughout the whole game. I've been loyal to my alliance. They were loyal to me. I was the cog that was keeping everything together. I won all these challenges. I played this good, clean, honest game. If she flips at the last second after being browbeaten into that by Hayden, what can she even say? Like, Hayden's just going to walk away in a sweep there. Like, it wouldn't even be close.
Right, yeah. First of all, I think the biggest consideration is under no circumstances can Monica flip here, just because of the likelihood of Laura Moret returning from Redemption and then Sierra, Hayden, and Laura running, you know, booting her at 5 or 4. And also, like you said, she just tanks any compelling argument she can make at Final Tribal Council. And I think those are both excellent points, and I don't have much more to add.
Yeah, also, the other thing is, when they were pitching this to her, they said that, they being Hayden Sierra, they said they were going to vote for Jervis. Now, for Monica, if she is going to take this big, drastic step here, flipping over, it's going to be to take out Tyson. There's no way it's going to be to take out Jervis, who is the one person that everyone there wants to be sitting next to in the finals, because they know that they're going to beat him. Like, I would be shocked if Jervis got a single vote in any kind of scenario unless Tyson is on the jury, which obviously at this point isn't going to happen.
Right, and that's very surprising to me, honestly, because I was thinking preseason, and I know, I feel like Jervis is a great, generally speaking, with people. I just feel like when he gets caught up in the heat of the moment, he just totally loses it, and I think that's completely been what's torched his game. I think, given some, you know, Monica's kind of status as a goat, and Tyson goading people on, G-O-A-D, as they're, you know, Katie, to, oh, the, your seat's over there now, and pointing to the jury and what have you. I think Jervis, if he'd just been laid back, probably could have had a shot to win this one.
That's true. At the same time, though, I feel like maybe the two of them were attracted to each other in the beginning precisely because they recognize parts of themselves in each other, right? So Tyson realizes that Jervis is going to trash talk people, is going to, you know, be very upfront about that. And I think Jervis admires the fact that Tyson is just very kind of, is able to joke around and be sarcastic and be snarky. And the fact that their personalities are so compatible really helps them work together. So I feel like it's one of those things where it was kind of destined to happen in that sense.
Okay, but I guess I just, I don't feel like it was always going to be Tyson who was going to emerge victorious there. So Hayden goes, but let's talk about how they tried to make that not happen. Let's talk about Hayden and Sierra's pitch to Monica that Tyson and Jervis have just been calling her dumb and that she's their little puppy. Was this a compelling argument, do you think? Granted, I know we're both obviously on the same page that nothing they could have done really would have made a difference, but what did you make of how they approached this?
Yeah, I thought, I can't remember who it was that made a very interesting point that typically you'd expect someone like Hayden to appeal to the person on the bottom by making some kind of rational argument, by saying, you know, if you go to the end with this person, they're going to get this jury vote and this jury vote, and, you know, you can't trust them because of this, and they were saying these things. But they made a very emotional argument to Monica, which is, these people are the villains, they've been saying all this stuff about you, you don't want to let yourself as a person in the game get used by them. And I feel like that has some merit to it, and I think if you're going to do that, you have to fully commit to that approach. But I think they kind of undermined themselves when they said that we view you, like we being Hayden Sierra, as Tyson's lapdog. Right? At that point, you could tell that they were desperate because they were seeing the same kind of abuse that they were accusing Tyson and Jervis of using. Like, if your pitch to Monica is Tyson and Jervis are calling you their lapdog, and now you're saying to Monica, you are Tyson's lapdog, you're kind of validating anything that they might actually have said.
In one sense, but I think the idea behind that was, not only is that what they're saying and that's what we're thinking, it's what we as future jurors and the current jurors are thinking, and thus if you stick with this plan, you will never be anything but the lapdog, whereas if you come with us, you're at least giving yourself shots.
Yeah, I mean, I think we both agree that ultimately this is always going to be futile, but it's just so difficult to convince an actual human being that, okay, you need to be seen as an independent person, and the way to do that is do everything that we want you to do.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not a case of working towards Tyson's agenda or doing something different. It's working in favor of Tyson or working in favor of Hayden. And it's pretty clear which of those she has to choose at that point.
Yeah, I mean, Monica's position really plays itself, I would say. And I think I'm honestly surprised that it looks like Monica's going to go on to lose here. Because it seems like, I mean, it's not even looks like. There's no outcome other than a Tyson victory as far as the edit's been concerned. Where it seems like Monica could have a really compelling case to make if she got to the final, you know, assuming she does get to the finals against Tyson and Jervis.
In what sense? Like, compelling to you or compelling to people who are actually on the jury?
Compelling to a random person, and I suppose both compelling to me and to the people on the jury, where she has won the challenges, she's not been the frat boyish kind of, I mean, I know they're both in their 30s and 40s, but you know what I mean, the kind of jockey and exclusionary kind of tendencies that Tyson and Jervis have had, where I could see her, at least, like we always say in a Final Three situation, you want to give yourself a unique argument to make. And I think she does have a unique argument she can make. And I'm just surprised that it looks like it's not going to work out. Maybe she, you know, I'm suspecting she probably gets second place over Jervis if Tyson doesn't win unanimously. And that's probably the main reason for it, is just because her case is so distinct from Tyson's compared to Jervis's.
Yeah, I mean, whose votes can you see her picking up then in that case?
Yeah, that's really tough. I don't feel like Tyson's going to win unanimously. I feel like something's going to go differently, and I don't see it going to Jervis. And maybe it's Katie, maybe it's Tina, maybe it's Laura Moret, maybe it's Sierra. I think she picks up, sexist ban alert. I think she picks up one of the women.
Yeah, and I think Tyson is certainly doing his best to ensure that he doesn't win unanimously. I think if Monica does pick up votes, I think Laura Moret might actually be the most likely candidate, just because they've shared kind of a similar storyline in the game where, you know, they're both older women, they've both been very strong in challenges, they both had to kind of win the respect of the group and work their way up from the bottom, and Monica was more successful at that than Laura was. I could see her giving her kind of sympathy or respect vote or whatever you want to call it. Beyond that, though, I could see, because Caleb seemed fairly bitter at Tyson Jarvis on his exit, and if he's still feeling like that, then maybe he just throws his vote to Monica, despite not actually having any kind of great sympathy for her.
Yeah, I could. I mean, who the hell knows how Caleb's going to vote, right?
Right, but I think the rest of them, like, I mean, we can get into this now if you like. I think Ars and Vidas are locked for Tyson. I don't think that's even in question.
Agree.
All right, so then it's Caleb who we think could be up in the air, although ultimately I think he would still come around and vote for Tyson.
I think Caleb will come down on a vote for Tyson. I think Caleb may be largely dependent on Hayden. So what do you think about how Hayden may vote?
I think Hayden is a lock for Tyson.
He's a lock. I think he's overwhelmingly likely to vote for Tyson, but I don't think it's a lock. Like, I don't think he's going to be falling over himself to vote for Tyson.
Okay, but look at the alternatives. He's obviously not voting for Jarvis, and no one else is voting for Jarvis either, so it's not special in that regard. But, like, why would he vote for Monica when he had to make this pitch to her where he said, I think, sincerely, I see you as Tyson's lapdog. You need to switch now if you're going to change that perception that I have and that other people have of you, and she just stayed true to it.
Yeah, okay, I guess I'm buying that now. So I think with Hayden goes Caleb, and that's four right there for Tyson, so it would take running the females for anyone else to...
Yeah, I think you could tell at that tribal council where they had to draw rocks, just from, I guess, the looks or the interactions between Hayden and Tyson, you could tell that they both respected each other enough to... Obviously, they wanted the other to lose, but you could tell that they really had that kind of high estimation of each other.
I don't know how high my estimation would be of Tyson if I was Hayden and I just completely destroyed him in the round of six. But yeah, I know what you mean. Like, there is certainly, at least to a certain degree, a mutual respect. And I think just primarily, though, it's going to be because of lack of any other compelling option that Hayden ends up going for Tyson.
Okay. So I guess we don't have to do it chronologically then, but who would be the next jury we have to consider? I guess, let's say, Tina.
Sure. Tina, I think she had that speech about, oh, well, Tyson, you just lost all these jury votes or Jarvis. I don't think she's ever voting for Jarvis, first of all. I could see her probably being the most likely, along with Laura Moret, for voting for Monica. And I think that's only going to get Monica second place.
Right. Ultimately, though, I think that reaction was something that happened in the moment. And secondly, it was directed towards the both of them. So if she's bitter at them, again, she can't really go somewhere else and vote for Jarvis. So she has to choose between them. And if she's not clouded by bitterness or anything like that, then Tyson seems like the compelling choice.
Yeah, and I think, we're being shown Tyson being kind of a dick to people on their way out, at least to Katie, and kind of rubbing it in the jurors' faces. But I think when it comes down to it, people are going to oddly respect that he's so willing to own his position. Just because he's Tyson, and let me be very clear about that, just because he's Tyson, I think it goes along with his personality. Like, he is a really endearing guy in kind of a dickish way, 24/7. And so I think people, the story will check out in their minds that, oh, that's just Tyson being Tyson, versus when it's Russell being Russell, it's a different story.
Yeah, and to build on that quickly, in one of Katie's exit interviews, she was asked specifically about that remark that Tyson made to her, and she said, obviously it didn't feel good to hear that, but you could tell that was just Tyson being Tyson, and it was understandable given how tense that was, given how unexpected that all was. You could tell that he was just very relieved to stay in the game, and the way that manifested itself was he makes snarky comments because he's Tyson and that's what he does.
Yeah, and I also think in that moment, Tyson probably was like, holy shit, I just won the game.
Yeah, and also, I just didn't lose the game, right? Like, he just survived the highest stakes coin flip you're ever going to see on Survivor.
Right, yeah. I mean, Tyson's equity there was like $666,000 if he just doesn't draw the bad rock. Yeah, let's talk about Laura and Sierra. Do you see, obviously, I get once again, there's no way it's Jarvis. I think we brought up earlier, Laura could be a likely Monica vote. And I think Laura may be the type, like I was thinking last season, when it's so clear that Cochran's going to win by such a blowout, I would probably put my vote on Dawn to give her the second place money.
Yeah.
I think we may see that with someone here giving Monica second place.
Yeah, although I think, building on what we saw in the game, Laura might actually take direction from Sierra. And in that case, I think Sierra definitely votes for Tyson.
Yeah. I mean, the more we go through this, I could see this being a unanimous Tyson victory.
Just like another 8-0-0 for Tyson.
Which is unbelievable considering how he's played, as far as I'm concerned. I guess the more we go through this, I don't feel like Tyson should win unanimously, but I'm not really seeing any way that he does. Like, I could definitely see it happening, I guess.
Yeah, at the same time, though, given the way that they built up Monica so carefully and so assiduously for that first part of the season, I could see her coming quite close and it being like 5-3 maybe or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely still open-ended. I could see Monica getting as many as 3 votes, but certainly she's not going to get 4 and make it a tie or whatever. And so I think anywhere from 8-0 to 5-3 is definitely within the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I guess my point is, it would be very easy to just completely bury Monica Culpepper if she gets 0 votes in the final tribal council. The fact that they didn't do that speaks to it being close and they need a reason to show, you know, why it was close. Like, if you just don't give her any kind of positive content, it would be difficult to see why she picks up maybe 2 or 3 votes. Whereas if it is a unanimous blowout, then you can just do whatever you want and no one's going to care.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's definitely a good point. So I guess I would put my money on Monica getting at least 1 vote. What would you say? Over under over under half a vote for Monica.
Over.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I'm on board with that. One other thing, we've been speculating these last couple of weeks about who's going to get the sprint player of the season. No one, because Sprint is no longer sponsoring the show.
Yeah, do we know why that is? Like, was there some event that turned them off, or?
I have no idea why it is. I don't. When did they start doing it? Fiji, I want to say, or Cook Islands, I want to say.
It wasn't Cook Islands, I don't think.
Didn't Ozzy barely edge out Yule in Cook Islands?
I think there was some kind of unofficial thing, like maybe through the CBS website then, but I'm not sure it was affiliated to Sprint, and I'm not sure there was some kind of cash prizes hatched there.
Okay. Well, either way, no one's going to get it. However, on RHAP, they are doing the player of the season. I'm officially endorsing Hayden. I'm sure that comes as a big surprise to you. You got an endorsement, Dom?
Well, I think a lot of people are going to be endorsing Hayden, so I may as well jump on the wagon, but I don't feel bad about that at all. I think Hayden, I won't say deserves it, because I don't think anyone can deserve this type of thing, but like I would like to see Hayden win that.
Oh, Tyson's going to run away with it. It's not even going to be close. Tyson's an RHAP Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, but like I could easily see an influx of Big Brother fans. Like if this is seen as official and then you have like Rachel Riley tweeting out some link to it or something, then I could see this like mass influx of Hayden voters.
All right, no fucking chance. I'll tell you that right now.
All right, you've got
it's
action
Tyson,
if you want it.
Lock of the decade, it's Tyson.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's a very different outcome than would probably have happened if it was the general survivor viewership actually voting on it like it normally is.
I will say though, I think that kind of audience recognizes that Hayden has played higher above his station than Tyson has this season.
I don't think they care. They think Tyson is fantastic on RHAP.
Yeah, I think it. Maybe I'm just giving them far too much credit, but I'd like to think that there's more going into it than that.
Well, okay, I mean, I'll book any amount of action you want on that. That Tyson wins it by gets more than half the votes.
Yeah, like maybe I'm just being uncharacteristically optimistic about humanity here, but I don't think I am. Like I think Hayden actually has a pretty good shot at that.
Okay, well I don't see Hayden winning it as much as I would like for him to, and despite my endorsement, you know, maybe my endorsement will put him over the top, Dom. Maybe your endorsement too, but I don't see that coming in. Looking ahead to the finale, Tyson's going to win. Thanks a lot, editors and spoiled assholes who think they're being coy on Twitter, and they're not. This is such a foregone conclusion. I hate that we come in here every finale podcast and say, well, this is definitely going to happen. I feel like the only time that hasn't been the case has been South Pacific and Philippines since we've been starting doing this.
I guess one thing that's still open-ended is, what do you think the general mood of this jury is going to be? Like, are there going to be any particularly bitter jurors, or like, are we going to see any outlandish or weird or memorable jury speeches?
I could see Tina being weirdly trying to make a big deal out of herself, and I think Vetus could be along the same lines, where I think Vetus is going to, like, honestly, Vetus strikes me as the type who takes himself way too seriously.
I think
I see that being the case at Final Tribal Council.
Yeah, I think if there's someone who just goes completely off the deep end, like Alex Angarita style, it could easily be Vetus.
Yeah, I think he's got to be the front runner. Anything else for looking ahead to the finale that we want to get to? Oh, sorry.
I will say, though, that I think, in general, this jury is going to completely just rake Jervis over the coals. Like, they are, really? they are not going to be forgiving with him whatsoever.
Well, I just feel like there's no point to that. Like, what, everyone knows he's not going to win. It's not going to be, like, the most compelling. Like, I don't see.
That's never stopped people in the past. Like, you know, Brenda didn't think, well, we don't need to cause unnecessary harm to Dawn because he's not going to win. Like, that's just not, like, if anything, I think that that prompts people to just kick them while they're down, because they know that they're not getting any kind of validation out of it. So why even risk that harm to yourself? Like, you know that if no one's voting for the person and everyone's piling on, you lose nothing by just joining in and having a go at it while you're still there.
Yeah, and one thing I actually hadn't considered until just now talking about this, and not that it ever really matters, Tyson is going to mop the floor with Jervis and Monica at Final Tribal Council.
You think? See,
I
agree that it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to win, but I'm not sure how well his brand of humor is going to go down there. Like, if they're looking for serious answers, obviously they're not going to get that from Tyson. Like, I'm not... Maybe he just completely misjudges the mood of the jury, or maybe he just doesn't care what the mood of the jury is, and he's just going to be himself.
I think he's going to play to the jury with a lot of Tyson sprinkled in. Like, he'll make jokes, but I think largely he'll take it seriously, because he knows it's just a done deal unless he completely tanks.
Right, but how do you think that's going to determine how he speaks to them?
I think he's going to put forth a solid effort and mix in his own personality that he knows is why people love him in the first place.
All right, so you said you think he's going to really go after Joes and help the Joes just pound him into the floor. How is he going to go about doing that, do you think? Is it going to be subtle, or is it going to be like joking, just kind of gently throwing him under the bus the way that Dan kind of did with Memphis? Or like,
I don't know.
How do you see that going down?
Well, the thing is, I don't think it's going to take much, because like you said, I could definitely see the jurors being open about not being in love with Jervis. I just don't see that a ton of that making air, because I feel like it kind of speaks for itself. And I could see Tyson very quickly becoming confident at Final Tribal Council that he's got it in the bag. And I don't think he's going to need to do much of that.
Right. I think Ars and Tina in particular, given that they had this kind of pregame thing going on with Jervis, they are going to be more, I guess, bitter, if you want to call it that, than they might have a right to be normally.
Okay, well, I think you're definitely onto something, which is they're going to feel like, why the hell did you go with Tyson when you could have just as easily have gone with us? And then our pregame, you know, we could all be sitting there.
Right, I'm not saying it's going to be some kind of Lex and Boston Rob thing, but given that they have something which they thought preceded and therefore transcended the game, they're going to really want to vent at him and get some kind of justification for that.
Well, I think certainly that will come up, at least. I don't know if they're going to be as explicit as saying, hey, what the hell happened to our pregame alliance? However,
yeah.
Well, the thing is, I think Jervis runs pretty good that the two people whose pregame alliance he screwed over are Aris and Tina, both former winners and both people who understand that it's just a game.
Right. I don't think Aris's way of getting that across is going to be standing there shouting at him. It's probably going to be some kind of like disgusted look, or just not even giving him the time of day there and just, you know, engaging with Tyson, maybe with Monica, but just leaving Jervis aside.
Oh, I could see a lot of people just not asking Jervis a question.
I think the difference is with someone like Sherry, for instance, people didn't like her or didn't respect her. And so, you know, some of them maybe wanted to take a shot at her and they had fun doing that. But the rest of them, they didn't see the need to even dignify her presence there by asking her a question. But I think with Jervis, a lot of people there have a score that they want to settle. And so they can't really ignore the fact that he's there. Like, while they have this chance, they're going to take it.
Okay, I definitely think, and first of all, it's total bullshit that each finalist doesn't get to address each juror, just regardless of whether or not they get to ask them a question, or regardless of whether or not they are asked a question. But I don't see a ton of Jervis Final Tribal Council making air, I guess is my point. I feel like the understanding is going to be, it's not really important what Jervis is saying here.
Sure, but I think they always want to show some big exchange to sum up the mood of the jury towards that particular juror. Like, if the overwhelming mood of the jury, as I think it will be, is Joe has just did nothing deserving of respect, then they need some person to act as like the front man for that. And I'm not quite sure who that's going to be, but they need someone to really kind of convey what the jury is thinking there.
Okay, I think that honestly might be Tina.
Okay. I see it being Vetus, actually. Like, Vetus could just unload on Jervis.
Yeah. That's definitely possible.
And Monica as well, because he didn't even have any time for her at all while he was in the game.
Yeah,
so thinking about some of the other jurors, I imagine, like, Katie isn't going to make any waves. She's going to be pretty respectful, I think. Sierra, I think Sierra as well is going to be like that. I mean, it might be that she, like, carries over this very high opinion of herself and wants to really flaunt that at the jury stage, but I think in general she's going to be pretty low-key. Laura Moret could be interesting, I think.
Oh, definitely. I think Laura Moret could definitely have quite a bit to say. Granted, in my opinion, pretty much unwarrantedly, because she hasn't really done a whole lot of great stuff within the game, and I don't feel like she's earned the right to let these people who have actually done a good job, you know, a comparatively good job within the game, like, let them have it at Final Tribal Council, which the only reason she's even there is because of Redemption Island.
Yeah, but if you think back to when they used to do that little segment before they went to Final Tribal, where you'd hear these voiceovers of the jurors speaking and just giving like a 10-second soundbite of what they were thinking heading in. I remember in Australia, Elizabeth said, like, everyone sitting on the jury thinks that they're the most deserving and that they should have won. And people carry that mentality over. And so, like, everyone sitting there on that jury thinks, well, even though I didn't win, if only this one thing had gone differently, or if this one person had kept their word like they should have done, then I'd be sitting up there claiming the title right now. And so there's always going to be the sense of entitlement there.
Well, I feel like there will be that, except for with Laura Moret, who has been voted out at least twice, and it's looking like probably three times.
Right, but as she sees it, it's not that she got voted out two or three times. It's she fought her way back in, she won all these duels, she made a name for herself, she was this great competitor, she did right by her daughter. You know, she doesn't think about it in the same way that we might.
Right, yeah, I certainly agree that if anyone can convince themselves that they, as the person who got voted out three times and just happened to have a Redemption Island season, apart from maybe Ozzy, who's happened to already, it's probably Laura Moret that can convince herself that she deserved to win.
Sure. How do you think Hayden's going to approach it? Because we've never actually seen him on a jury before.
That's true. I think he'll be, I mean, there isn't a whole lot of up and down with Hayden. I think he's just going to be Hayden. He's going to be pretty cool.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he's going to get heated at anyone, and it's not like he's going to lay on the praise too thick for anyone.
I disagree. I could see him going off on Jervis. And I'm going to say that about everybody, because I think I could see as many as all of them going off on Jervis. But I think Hayden, more than the others, understands why Jervis played a bad game and why Jervis is delusional. So it goes beyond just not really warring to Jervis or being mad at something that Jervis said. It's like having an active disrespect as a gamer for the way that he's conducting himself.
Yeah, I just don't feel like he's the type at all to make that too vocally known.
Or like that stupid speech that when they force rocks, where it's like, this isn't Big Brother, you know, don't hate the player, hate the game. Like, he's not going to take well to that.
No, but I think he's Hayden Moss, and he's not going to let that be known.
Why not? Like, he doesn't have a reason to keep that under wraps anymore.
Because that's just not part of his personality, as far as I can tell.
I don't think that it's not a part of his personality. I think it's a side that we haven't got a chance to see yet. Like, while he was on Big Brother 12, when was it correct or even an option for him to just unload on someone?
At no point, because he's in the middle of playing Big Brother.
Right, and now he's no longer in the middle of playing the game anymore.
Okay. So I guess just in lack of any I feel like that's a thin argument, Dom. Now he finally can, he's definitely going to.
I don't think
but everything we've ever seen would tell you that he's not.
No, I think the whole point of the jury stage is that it gives people a chance to vent 38 days of build-up animosity that they weren't able to express publicly because they were in the game. That's not exclusive to Hayden. It's true of everybody there.
Okay, I'll allow for a non-zero consideration for that. I just really don't see it happening. I think Hayden's going to be nothing but the Hayden we've known and loved so far at Final Tribal Council. And maybe it's worth considering that a couple of these people on the jury, Hayden, Tina, Aris, they've all been finalists on these shows before. How do you think that's going to impact them as jurors? Well, this is something we haven't really talked about. Are they going to err on the side of, oh, now I can finally let them have what the jury let me have? Or is it, I know what kind of position they're in, and I'm going to try to give them a chance to defend themselves?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. You might expect them to be more empathetic about it, so the second thing that you suggested. But at the same time, I think given that, they have, at least that they see it, an understanding of what it means to be a winner, and they don't want to include in their rank someone who really doesn't seem up to it in the way that, for instance, Jervis certainly doesn't, and in the way that maybe Monica doesn't. And so
that's an excellent point.
I think they might have this very high opinion of themselves as winners and as gamers, and they, you know, anyone who claims to be in their league in that regard, like, if Tyson comes in saying, you know, I played a fantastic game and I deserve to win, part of them might understand that that's true, but at the same time, they might think it's kind of not on for him to be saying it like that. Like, they're the ones who are qualified to judge it, and it's not for Tyson to rise above his station.
Yeah, no, I think that's very interesting. I think it's going to be fun to see how that plays out. And I could see each of them going, I guess, a bit of a different way, like adjusting to having been a finalist and now being a juror a bit differently among each of the three of them. Let's talk a little bit about what we may see go down at this reunion. We know friend of the podcast and now Survivor Hall of Famer John Cochran's going to be there plugging the hell out of the Millers, which is not good.
No.
Apart from that, what do we see going down at this reunion? Because one thing that I can't help but think about, Dom, is I have to imagine, and I mean, I know this is the case, that Tyson is very aware that about 26 hours from when we're recording this, he's about to win $1 million. What do you think Tyson's going to be like tomorrow? Like, what's he going to wear? I think I could see him wearing some outlandish garb and so forth.
I mean, we've seen Tyson kind of not give a fuck what other people think before. I think he realizes that he's about to join this kind of very rarefied crowd. At the same time, though, the fact that he's just about to win Survivor is going to give him so much unwarranted self-confidence, he's just going to go completely over the top, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, he is going to own this reunion show, and this is going to be vintage Tyson, I think.
I'm going to love it. I said entering the season that Tyson was my favorite player to ever watch play Survivor, and over just watching this season, because his win just felt so inevitable, and I felt like people had just ruined it for me, and people being the editors and people being people who knew spoilers well before the season aired, it just felt like there was no other outcome. I don't want to say too early on, because there was certainly some suspense for the people who's listened to us cover the season. We certainly weren't this clear that we weren't this certain that it was going to be a Tyson victory until the last few weeks or so. But it still felt like the whole time that it was just kind of looming over us. And I feel like once it's all over, we can get back to the Tyson of old, where the Tyson who people aren't just looking for reasons to praise him.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to show any kind of dignified restraint. He's just going to go all out and just be himself. And that's, Tyson being himself, he can be a bit of an asshole sometimes, but he makes for compelling TV, and that's all you can really ask for.
Yeah, he's an entertaining asshole, which is exactly what I like to say. Yeah, what else at this reunion? First of all, they're all going to get to sit on the stage. Hey, that's cool, I guess.
Yeah, the cynical part of me thinks that's only because Rupert and Brad are there. But, and I think next season, when that's not the case anymore, they might just revert to putting them back in the audience, which would be a fucking travesty, by the way. They really just shouldn't be doing that. But apparently they don't have the same kind of respect for the jurors that they should do. Other than that, I'm not excited at all for the Cochran segment. And I can understand that maybe we want to check in with people who were just on the previous season and see how they're doing. But we don't need to hear from, like, random little girls in the audience who happen to have this fangirlish crush on one of the cast members and who can't even form coherent sentences. Like, just keep it to the cast, and there's more than enough material that you can ask them. Right, like, you could keep them there for hours and hours, just picking their brains about what happened in the season. You don't need to find these distractions like this.
No, I agree entirely. We don't need Rudy Bosch out there calling Hatch a queer when he's clearly not even with it. I feel like, or we don't need Boston Rob out there whoring his new book and so forth. I feel like I love me some John Cochran, but I feel like there's no way that segment's going to be remotely good, right? There's just been no precedent for it. Yeah, I can't wait to watch the finale. Nonetheless, I know we've been a little bit down on this episode just because it feels like such a foregone conclusion. I'm looking very much forward to it. I feel like the season, once again, has just absolutely flown by. I can't believe we've covered however many episodes we've done, 13 now, and it's all coming to a close tomorrow night. Obviously, we both have Tyson winning, and we both have Monica coming in second, if anyone even gets second. Any other predictions we want to make before we close out here?
No, not really. I think it's Laura coming back in, going out at either 5 or 4 whenever she loses immunity. Sio going out in that other spot. We get the final three that we anticipated for a while now, which is Tyson, Jervis, and Monica, with Tyson taking it home, Monica maybe picking up a vote or two, and then Jervis just getting completely reamed by everybody. And presumably fighting back against that. Like, Jervis isn't going to take that line down.
Oh, not at all. Jervis, I mean, if there was a good angle to take, it's not like he's going to change anyone's mind at Final Tribal Council, but I certainly don't even see him trying to change anyone's mind. In fact, I see him reinforcing exactly what they think of him.
Yeah, here's the question I wanted to ask you earlier, actually. Jervis seems to sincerely think that he might actually have a shot here. What do you think is going through his head? Like, what's the argument in his head for why he can and should beat Tyson?
I think it's kind of like what we hit on earlier, where everyone is the star of the story in their own mind, and everyone feels like their case is compelling, everyone feels like they should be the rightful winner. And I think that's just more of the same with Jervis.
It's just so odd that people can't seem to see this disconnect between how they see it and how people who don't have that same window into their soul are going to see it.
Like, I agree with you that it is very odd, but I don't know what to tell you. It's just how people are, especially the people that cast on Survivor.
Yeah, because I can imagine for Jervis, it might actually be rational for him to think that, right? Because he's been in all of these conversations in Tyson where he presumably at least was contributing ideas and, you know, having Tyson bounce ideas off of him, and they were making like calls jointly together. And he might think that he can convince them that, you know, he was letting Tyson be the figurehead for that, so that all the heat would go on Tyson, and he was actually making the decisions behind the scenes and all of that. But to the jury, it's just going to look like, you know, Tyson said jump and Jervis said how high. Like, Jervis has been borrowed up Tyson's ass for the first 38 days. And even, you know, no matter what he says on day 39, that's not going to change their perception of him.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. Dom, anything else to get to before we get out of here today?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. Enjoy the finale. I'm sure it's going to be tonight by the time you're hearing this, or it already happened by the time you're hearing this. So congratulations, Tyson, in advance. And we will talk to you guys very soon. Take care, everybody.